The Art Show on Fresh Air Radio, Thursdays at 3 p.m. A taste of all the culture Edinburgh has to offer, from theatre to literature, from film to the visual arts. Remember, remember the 5th of November. Welcome back to a Bonfire Night edition of The Art Show. As always, I'm Maisie Hallam, your humble host, and today I'll be joined by some lovely arty guests to get your November kicked off right. We'll hear from author Kayleigh Michelle about her work and experiences as a writer, topped off by a sneaky preview of her upcoming novel, followed by the poem of the week, as always, in celebration of the month of November. But first, let's hear from the student newspaper culture editors. Hello, folks.
Hello.
Lovely to have you on. Erin and Sorrel are going to take us through what's going on in Edinburgh's culture scene this week. Erin, would you like to go first and tell us about visual arts?
I would love nothing more, Maisie. So this week, again, we've still got in-person exhibitions, which despite the kind of slight decline in COVID situation, it continues to be something we have. So it's really, really good to keep promoting that and enjoying that. So one of the first exhibitions I wanted to highlight was one at Ingleby Gallery in Newtown in Edinburgh, which is actually a really, really nice gallery to go and look around. It sounds a bit silly. It's got a really kind of nice, clean sort of, it's got parky flooring. It's just a very much how you imagine a gallery to look. And if you want a bit of comforting kind of, oh yeah, this is definitely a gallery in a world where most other things are a little bit confusing and not the same, it's a great one to go to. And the exhibition in question is called Janet by Catherine Walker. So essentially it's looking at women at work. Catherine Walker takes pictures of women doing kind of various tasks, usually domestic ones, and then translates those photographs into really, really beautiful oil paintings, which have a real kind of realist quality to them. And it's a very well-lit exhibition. We've actually got a review of it coming up for the student, which I've had a little look at, and is really, really well written. And it's a lovely way, I think, to spend a Sunday afternoon, especially in the autumn when it's a little bit colder. It's a good alternative for a little walk. And then the other element that I wanted to kind of flag, I know Al spoke about last week when I wasn't here, which was the Naval Gazing exhibition at Carlton Hill Observatory, which is essentially, for the uninitiated, kind of an exploration of the gut in terms of it being kind of trusting your gut is a very, very commonly used phrase. And Kirsty Hendry, a Scottish artist, has created a film actually looking into the kind of biology behind that and how our bodies are actually seen as very irrational, and sometimes trusting your gut is not a good idea. But essentially, there is an online discussion of that exhibition with the artist coming up on Wednesday on Zoom, which is free. So if you can't make it to the observatory, or you just kind of, I suppose, want to get into the meat of it a bit more with the person who's actually come up with the idea, then that's happening on Wednesday, 6 p.m, and the tickets are on Eventbrite. So yeah, that's what we've got in art this week.
Lovely, still lots of things going on. I'd love that. Every week I'm like, yes, Edinburgh's art scene has it together.
I'm shocked we've still got stuff going on, to be honest. I thought we'd have run out of steam by now, but
it's incredible. Like, now they've been allowed to open, they're like, holding on, like,
yeah.
No, do not close our doors. No, I love the turn of phrase you use there, describing the Calton Hill exhibition as an explosion of the gut.
Oh, did I was meant to say exploration, but I'll go with explosion. Sorry, guys.
I think that's quite accurate. No, have you been along to the first one that you talked about?
The Janet exhibition in Ingleby. I haven't, actually. I've been to Ingleby before. It only opened this weekend, so I'm hoping to get down there at some point. But I know one of our writers has already been and kind of did a bit of a, shared loads of pictures from the exhibition, and it looks really, really good. And as I say, Ingleby's a lovely gallery anyway to go to.
Brilliant. Yeah. So there we go. Culture editor approved. Definitely head on down to the Ingleby Gallery. Definitely head on up Calton Hill to the observatory and join in on Zoom if you can to hear more about the Explosion of the Gut exhibition.
Yeah, that's the one.
Next, I'm introducing a very special guest, Sorrel, who is the new theatre editor for the student newspaper. This is her first show. Are you excited?
Yes, I'm so excited, Maisie.
And slightly nervous, I'm sure. I remember my first appearance on The Week in Arts when I was a culture editor was horrifying. So,
yeah, no, I'm really happy to be here though.
So would you like to tell us about what's going on in theatre this week, if there's anything?
Yes, absolutely. So everyone knows the theatre scene is a little bit quiet at the moment, but we're still managing to get a couple of things here and there. So this week, the Traverse Theatre is actually streaming on Friday night. It's a show called The Believers Are But Brothers. It's by the Javad Alipour Theatre Company. And it was actually at the Edinburgh Fringe a couple years ago, and it was a really big hit. So it's described as a journey into an online world of fantasy, violence and reality, which sounds very exciting if you ask me. And it deals with themes of radicalisation and how the internet and technology have kind of had an impact on that and play a part in it. It sounds like it's an interactive show. I think the audience has the option to join WhatsApp groups while the show is actually on, and I imagine interact with other members of the audience and maybe even influence parts of the show. So that would be a really cool thing to go along and watch. You can grab tickets on the website there, and it's really cheap for students. It's only £1. So if anyone's missing out on a little theatre action, that would be a really good thing to go and have a look at. And there should also be a review on that in a couple of weeks' time for the student, which would be great to read as well. And then the other thing for people who are wanting to get a little bit more involved, the Improverts, the comedy group that's part of the uni, they're doing workshops every Saturday over Zoom. So it's a really good way to go along and get involved with a bit of theatre if you're missing out on it at the moment. And you get to meet the members of the Improverts group and work on your improv skills. It sounds like something really fun and sounds like, you know, an activity that would not often be available. And especially at the moment when things to do are a little bit lacking, it might be really fun to go and have a bit of a funny Saturday afternoon.
No, that sounds really good. I think it's amazing what some of the theatre and the improv societies are doing at the university to kind of stay relevant in this kind of COVID time. We have a lot of them coming on the show to do readings and stuff, you know, radio plays. But I think a workshop's a great idea. So definitely do pop along to that if you're comedically minded. And as for the Traverse Theatre, like, I take my hat off to them every single week. Hat off to the Traverse Theatre, because what they are doing right now is amazing.
Yeah, they're working hard and they've got some stuff coming up for the next month as well that's looking really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, this show coming up is very interactive. I think they're really steering into the skid and doing a lot of interactive stuff that they might not be able to pull off in real life. They're kind of using the online to their advantage, and I think that's really, really great. So definitely check that out as well, and check out the review in the student newspaper when it comes out if you're kind of concerned about spending £1 on something you might not enjoy, I'm sure. The student review will be able to tell you what is what on that one. And speaking of, are there any other articles that you'd like to highlight for us that are especially amazing going into the paper this week?
Yeah, we've got a couple of good ones. I know for art, we've got a review of an exhibition that's actually just closed that was online. It's quite a comedically written review. So sometimes I find it quite funny to read reviews that are a little bit more critical or a little bit kind of self-deprecating. They're almost kind of quite theatrical to read. So that one is by Max Hunter and it's on About Time. And then we've also got, you know, with it still being Black History Month, well, last month being Black History Month, the last few elements of that in the paper. So we've got a piece on Faith Ringgold, who is an activist, a Black artist, performer, poet. She's really got a lot of strings to her bow, and she's been in the kind of art world scene for a long, long time now. And we've got a little bit of a profile about her. So if you'd like to read a little bit more about that, then that will be in this edition as well.
Lovely. That's a really exciting breadth of articles, as always.
Yeah, we do try.
I've always liked the introducing artists features that you do in the culture section, and very cool to have somebody who's kind of in and out of all elements of culture, not just an artist, but a poet as well. Very cool. Sorrel, I know you're new, but is there anything you'd like to share about your plans for the section or any very cool pitches you have that you'd like to relay to a wider audience?
So as I said before, there's not super a lot going on in actual theatres at the moment, so I'm thinking of trying to steer the section in not too far away from the review theme, obviously, but coming up in the next couple of weeks, I or one of our lovely writers is going to be talking to a recent graduate of a drama school here in Edinburgh, and we're going to be looking at his experience as a recent graduate and how he's planning on pursuing the acting career, which has already, you know, already a difficult career to sort of jump into, has taken quite a rough turn at the moment with, you know, the lack of arts going on and, or, you know, just the trouble that they've come into with the recent COVID everything, you know. So that I'm hoping that'll be really interesting to get a bit of insight into how he's planning on making that work and, you know, just to consider going forward into the next few months and years how the theatre industry is going to carry on, really.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to kind of steer the section at the moment, because you really can't know when theatre is coming back, live theatre is coming back, and certainly there aren't a lot of theatres in Edinburgh who have jumped on the online train.
Yeah, exactly.
So actually what's most interesting about theatre right now is how we can adapt it to our new way of living. Exactly. So I think that'll be really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing what comes of that. So, unfortunately, Al cannot join us this week, so literature shall remain a mystery for the next 7 days, but hopefully she'll be back next week to tell you what's going on. And for now, thank you very much for coming on, both of you.
No worries. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us. It's been a pleasure.
Next up, we'll hear from Kaylee Michelle about the life of an author, but first, let's hear November Rain by Guns N' Roses.
Darling, when
Welcome back. You're listening to The Art Show, and you will have just heard November Rain by Guns N' Roses. I'm joined now in the Zoom studio by Kaylee Michelle, an Edinburgh-based writer who I've very recently become acquainted with. She's going to talk to us about her published works and what it means to live as a writer. Hello, Kaylee.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for coming on. How are you doing today?
I am doing pretty well, yeah.
Excited, I hope. I won't describe you on your behalf any further. Could you tell us a bit about you and what it is that you do?
Yeah, I am an author. I am currently doing my MSc at University of Edinburgh. I'm taking creative writing. Hopefully it will be able to help me be able to teach creative writing, which I'm very passionate about.
Oh, cool.
I feel like as an author, it's good to kind of have your hand in many projects. So here I am in Edinburgh and it's a really magical place to be.
It is. I love it here as well. Have you just got started on your MSc? Did you start in September?
I started in September. Yep. I just got here. It feels like.
How are you finding the online Edinburgh experience?
Well, I'm actually really fortunate. I get to go to class in person, which is super rare.
I know. Wow, okay.
Yeah. And I'm super glad about that because I feel like it would have been a total waste coming here and not being able to actually do my education. So, yeah, my heart definitely goes out to all the students right now who are Zooming from a dorm room or whatever.
Yeah, it can be tough, but, you know, it's still great to be a part of the institution. If they're treating you well, I hear they're not treating some people well, but I'm glad you're having a good experience here. Welcome to Edinburgh and enjoy. It's a fantastic place to study. So what kind of things do you write about? What inspires you? Is there a sort of theme throughout your work, or are you kind of developing that as you do your degree, or still developing that as you write?
My first novel was published in 2019 by Palimpsest Press in Canada, and that was about about young Canadian musicians coming of age in Montreal, which is a very, you know, very musical artistic city, and so that kind of inspired my work. My second book is nonfiction, and that was, I can talk to you about that in a little bit, but my third book I'm kind of trying to do. It's more focused on historical research, so it's very challenging, actually, and that's kind of why I'm really glad to be at Edinburgh getting an education so that I have more tools to, you know, to arm myself with as I do this more challenging project. So, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but I guess I'm just kind of always evolving as a writer.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, that's kind of the answer I was expecting. I think very few people who create art ever sit there and go, yes, this is exactly what I do, and what I do is never changing. No, it's an ever-evolving kind of process, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, but I do know some artists who are very certain about what they're doing.
Maybe some, but not all.
Yeah, I'm jealous of those ones.
So what kind of skills are they that you develop doing a creative writing degree that are going to help you?
Well, I think, a lot of it is technical craft stuff. Things that as a reader, you would take for granted. Like when you pick up a really incredible book and you can't put it down, you know, as a reader, sometimes you don't really think about what's happening in that book to make it so engrossing. But, I mean, behind the scenes, writers are learning stuff like plot or character or pacing, and all kinds of tools to kind of make this world come to life and, you know, and make characters memorable so that when you put down a book, you think to yourself, oh man, I really miss being in that world, or I really enjoyed those characters. That's kind of what writers are learning in school, is basically how to create those totally addictive books, you know.
Something that you can't put down. Yeah, that's interesting, because I think as somebody who reads a lot, but certainly doesn't write prose, I never really think of the ability to develop worlds and characters as being a skill, a technical skill, like something that you learn. It seems to me like something that people can just do, and I can't do it. So that's really interesting that specifically is what you're learning to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, amazing. So you said you were published in 2019, your first novel in Canada. Could you kind of walk us through that process a little bit? I imagine any writers listening are probably like, how did it happen? Tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting process. I mean, I was doing my undergrad at Concordia in Montreal. And I'm also an older student as well. So, I mean, I think that also has definitely helped with my voice. I don't think I was very skilled technically when I was, you know, a 21-year-old writer, but, you know, by the time I got to university, I was about 28. So I had, the experience behind me to be able to kind of know what I wanted to say at that point. So, I was 28 years old. I was doing my undergrad in creative writing as well, at Concordia, which is an incredible school. The program is so great. I was really fortunate to have some really talented writers who were my mentors and my professors.
That's great.
Yeah, it was really great. And so I had this manuscript that I've been kind of tinkering with since I was like, you know, 24, 25 or something like that. And going through that program just really made me more talented. It gave me a work ethic that I didn't have before. It just gave me skills, you know, so I was able to, and resources, you know, that I was able to use. And I think the most valuable experience is getting tapped into a creative writing community. So, you know, having mentors and authors and people coming in and telling you who to contact and when, just all of these really invaluable things that you might not have if you're just out in the world, you know, as a writer just trying to do everything on your own. I highly recommend education and community for sure.
Yeah, definitely it's a situation where it's about not necessarily who you know in terms of who can give you a publishing deal, but who you know in terms of sharing ideas and thoughts and, you know, swapping work with other people who have the same interests and aspirations as you is probably really, really important in this kind of process.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. It's not who you know. It's the way that you know people, you know, it's kind of, yeah, about getting that community for sure.
So did you land your publishing deal through doing that degree? Was it one of your mentors who kind of steered you in that direction? Or how did you apply for it? And how did it kind of fall into your life, as it were?
Well, one of my professors knew that I had a book and that I was working on, and he suggested that I send it to somebody that he knew, which kind of sounds like nepotism, but at the same time, if I didn't have, I mean, it is kind of, but also if I didn't have the book, or if I didn't have the skill, or if I didn't have this story at this particular time, I could have emailed people until, you know, I was blue in the face and it wouldn't have mattered. You know, he set up the connection for me, but at the end of the day, it was me having to do the work, and me having to show that I had something, in order for this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was really nerve-wracking, you know, it was me kind of putting myself out there after years of rejection. I mean, James Joyce says that he could paper his walls with the rejection letters that he got, I think. So, I mean, you know, you have to be prepared for that.
Yeah, I imagine that's quite intrinsic to the process, but makes it all the more rewarding when you finally get where you wanted to go.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about the nepotism thing. It's definitely all down to the individual. But as we were saying, it's not about who you know, who can give you stuff. You
right.
need to know people in order to get anywhere with the skills that you already have.
Definitely, yeah. But I do think it does help to show deference and respect to older writers who have come before and who have already kind of established themselves, because they do know. Like, I don't think that being a young, arrogant writer is a very useful way to be, because it just, you know, you have to show respect to those who know what they're doing and know, you know. It's not a linear process either, you know. It's definitely a weird back and forth. That's just the life of the artist, you know.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the arrogant young writer is definitely a cliche, but it's one that we really need to leave behind.
I mean, you know, any 20-year-old can be, you know, full of their own glory. I'm sure I definitely was all, you know, hyped up on myself. But I think getting an education can really bring you back down to earth and show you. I mean, you know, just being plugged into a community full of people who are really talented is intimidating, but like in a good way, it's a good thing, you know?
No, absolutely. My experience in academia has definitely been humbling.
Yeah.
I would say that's the best word for it. Like, you definitely... Mixing with so many other people that you wouldn't have come across otherwise definitely kind of brings you to earth and puts things in perspective about how you need to organize your life and where you're going.
For sure, yeah. Because I was definitely like a cocky little writer, you know, and then I got into school and it was kind of like, oh, okay. You know, this is how it really is.
Yeah, time to pull up my socks. Yeah. So do you have some work upcoming? You mentioned a non-fiction. Do you have any works upcoming to be published?
I've got a nonfiction book. It's called The One, and it comes out with Douglas and McIntyre in August 2021.
How exciting!
Yeah, it's super super exciting. They're wonderful. It's weird to be putting my name on something that is nonfiction because I don't really know how that's gonna go. I mean, you know, I really have to stand behind this weird, weird book, and it's definitely a weird experience. But I spent some time just traveling in California, and basically that's what the book is about. So yeah.
So it's about your travels in California. What did you do there? Like, what specifically are you exploring?
It was such a random experience. I mean, like, being, you know, I guess I'll be 34 next year, and I just, you know, to look back on that experience that I had when I was 21 years old, I mean, I can't believe that I did shit like that. Like, I just, you know, I just basically took off to California with my possessions on my back, and I just kind of went for 4 months. I had,
Wow.
Yeah, I was really into, I read this book called Autobiography of a Yogi by Paramahansa Yogananda, and I just wanted to go join an ashram and just reject everything and just kind of, I don't know, I had all these hippie ideas, I guess. And so, of course, I went to California. But yeah, I don't know. And then I showed up in Los Angeles and I was like, this is not what I expected. And all sorts of escapades came from that. But being, you know, being young and rootless, it's definitely a thing, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really cool. I feel like there's a lot of work out there. It's kind of, there was a theme in like 20th century American literature to write, so, you know, On the Road by Jack Kerouac and all these kind of novels about people on adventures and going places, but they're all about white men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that it's actually really interesting to have not only a modern perspective on these kind of like ideas of traveling and finding yourself, but a woman's perspective as well. That's really awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
So could you read us an excerpt of that now? Or is that really cheeky for me to ask?
No, I can definitely do that. I've got, okay, yeah. So I guess I'll read, I showed up in California, just to give you some context. I showed up basically carrying this book with me. The first place that I went was the international headquarters up on Mount Washington. It was the, you know, this temple that Paramahansa Yogananda started, and I kind of went there hoping, I don't know what I was looking for. Anyway, so I'll read a little passage of, and this is kind of the beginning of the book. So let's see here. The doors were open. I went up the stairs, holding my book like a passport. The carpets were deep and red, and there was a desk in the entrance like a hotel. The air was smoky with incense. To the right of me was a massive portrait of the guru. A shorn nun in yellow robes greeted me in a German accent. She asked me where I'd come from to make this visit. I said, Canada. I told her I hiked the mountain. You could have called, she said. We send a car down for visitors. She smiled at me. Oh, I stood there stupidly. It dawned on me that I'd thought I would show up and then I would know what to do with myself, that something would feel satisfied or be made clear, but that hadn't happened. The nun began to turn away, and I stood in the lobby, my toes sinking into the deep carpet, breathing the smell of Nag Champa. Renunciants came and went through the door, their bodies loose and peaceful. Some of them went up the staircase into the depths of the building. I wanted to be taken to a room. I wanted someone to say they'd been waiting for me. Maybe I wasn't in the right role. Scruffy and anonymous, some unremarkable youth without money to pay for a yoga program, the bad habits of a runaway. I could see I was going to lose the nun, so I blurted, what do I have to do to stay here? How do I become a renunciant? He gestured at her ochre robe. I wanted her to cut off all my hair and take me to a room where all the noise would fall away. How old are you? She asked me. 21. You came a long way from Canada, but why? What for? I want to be a monk. I mean, a nun, I said. That was it. And I had no place to go, but I didn't tell her that part. Well, she indicated the front desk, the information pamphlets. We don't use ascetic life as a shelter. We are always in the world. But I saw enough that I was satisfied when I came. Do you think you've seen enough? She'd already made up her mind about me. I was dissatisfied. There's the guide. The nun jutted her chin toward a bored-looking old man near the door and strolled slowly away. What would they do, the bored old man and the front desk person, the yellow nun, if I ran upstairs into the quiet folds of the building? Yeah.
Wow. Okay. I was really enthralled. I really wanted you to go first.
Well, I can read another excerpt here. Yeah, this one kind of takes place further in the book when basically, I won't give too much away, but I wind up in Venice Beach. Yeah, things just keep happening. Yeah, so this story takes place, so this little vignette after we've done some LSD and we're sitting under a fig tree all night. And then we have to go to the corner store and get cigarettes and it becomes a mission. So this is what this excerpt's about. The canyons were heavy with expensive structures, the city patched up as a crazy quilt. I bobbed through the dark folds, completely anonymous. No one even knew I was here, right where I was. The deep hills had been full of musicians, a future anyone could have grabbed. But those ideas were so shiny and idiotic. Did anyone really once believe sunshine would save your life? Dahlia, the jewelry maker, lived with 7 other people and 3 dogs in a 1-bedroom apartment. Where was their pie in the sky? It was more of a circle game than those flowered airheads could have ever conceived. Who had been in the megalopolis when it had only been dirt and sky? Who was in the canyons first? Who had fished the waters and browned in the sun for free? As we walked along to buy smokes at the store, I trailed my fingers across the white wooden slats of picket fences and over the prickly hedges that penned in perfect beach homes. Drifting easily from the open windows were the sounds of glasses clinking, a jazz horn, a sleepy piano. People danced lazily across their million-dollar living rooms. Ah, this is the life, isn't it? A film of curtain pulled across a yellow pane. They wanted to be seen. I saw. I did what they wanted me to do. I longed. I wanted to sink my teeth into their lives. Someone dropped a wine glass on their hardwood. I held the spikes of their wrought iron fence, letting my friends, who were only with me by chance, walk ahead. I held the cold bars, and I knew this could be my entire life, this longing and looking in. There was the tinkling shush of the shards being swept. I let go of the fence and caught up to my friends, and we went into the store, fluorescent lights hard and cold against the night.
Ah. No, beautifully read. I was thinking, it's kind of an interesting way for me to be consuming, although a very small part of a novel, a very weird way to be consuming a novel over Zoom,
yeah,
with just a disembodied voice. And I was kind of curious how you feel about audiobooks and whether you would turn your works into audiobooks, because you read very nicely.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I would love to. I know that Leonard Cohen used to read his own poetry on vinyl records and stuff, and I thought that was really cool. So yeah, I would totally love to do that. I think that'd be really fun. And I think, you know, everything moves so quickly now that sometimes all you can do is just listen, you know, instead of read. So yeah. One of the things that really irks me about academia is that they make us speed read a novel a week. You know, I think that's such a disservice to novels. And I just kind of wish that professors would be like, okay, here, read this excerpt and then we'll study that, you know. And if you're interested in the novel, read it on your own time. So I don't think anything should be sped through.
No, I completely agree. I think I don't study an English literature degree. And part of the reason was I knew it would absolutely crush all of the joy I take in reading. Because I mean, I would say that I'm a fast reader, but I certainly don't want to blitz through classic novels, you know, in 5 days and then be like, yeah, read it, cool, done, move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Think about it for 5 minutes, write an essay, you know, get my grade back. Next novel, bring it in.
Yeah, so, just regurgitate. I don't like the plot that attitude. Kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. So that was a lovely reading. Thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Oh, thank you.
I was wondering if you have any kind of further advice? I know you've said a little bit kind of what your advice would be. Advice to aspiring writers. Would you say that studying to be a better writer is worthwhile? Is it just about who you know? And how could young people, or anyone in fact, increase their chances of getting their work out there and heard?
Wow. Well, I think reading is so important. I think the number one thing that I would always suggest is just read books, read books, read so many books that you just can't even keep your eyes open anymore. I don't know. But like the diversity of reading is so important too. Like, you know, don't just read the classics, read everything. There's so, I mean, the beauty of the diversity of publishing right now is that people are really interested in hearing voices that have never been celebrated before. So I think that's really important. I think being humble and curious. And I also think Poets and Writers magazine is a really helpful platform for writers. It's got contests. I'd also say, I know COVID has kind of screwed up everybody's lives, but they do, sometimes people do writing retreats and stuff. And I went to a couple of really, really cool ones. I got to study under incredible writers, really successful writers. And I also got to meet a lot of really cool up-and-coming writers who were participating in the program with me. Yeah, so I did one called Disquiet in Lisbon. I did another one on Cadihunk Island in Cape Cod. That was really cool. So yeah, I don't know. I just think, like, you know, getting out there, being curious, talking to people, reading, writing, it's all, yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, not being afraid to just kind of do a thing and yeah, learn a new thing and not stick with what you know. No, that's really interesting. I love the advice about writing retreats. I wouldn't have thought about that. But yeah, in terms of meeting new people yeah, and people yeah, who have different experiences to you, that must be absolutely invaluable.
Totally. And I guess if I had to offer one last piece of writing advice that I'd really, really say is probably the most important is don't be precious about your work, because if you ever do get an editor who finally does want to read what you have to write, do not be precious about it. They will edit your stuff down. They're going to whittle your words. They're going to want to make them better. And, you know, just going through different programs and going through different retreats and stuff, I mean, it's all about getting workshopped. You can't be defensive about your work. It doesn't really belong to yeah, you, you know. If you're going to be a really good writer, you have to be a good channel, you know, and get out of the way and just let the work come through you. And, you know, I mean, yeah, if you want to be professional, you just have to be open to being edited, for sure.
Learn how to welcome feedback. I think that's something that a lot of people could benefit from, to be honest, myself included.
Yeah. But it's hard, though. It is really hard. Sometimes it can feel like a yeah, personal attack, you know, especially when you're writing very personal things. But yeah, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that, you know, I mean, I've been really fortunate to have really good editors. And, you know, they'll see things that you don't see. And my work has only benefited from not being precious and attached to my stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think it is important to remember that even when an editor, you know, scribbles loads of red pen on your manuscript, they only want what's best. They only want it to be as good as it can be. Totally. Even if it sometimes feels like that is completely the antithesis of everything you are and everything you tried to channel into the writing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, and I've, you know, there's a few hills I've died on where I've said, okay, I'm not changing this. But for the most part, though, I mean, my work is so much better because I had an editor. I mean, that first draft is just, I have a tendency to really overwrite too. So, I mean, yeah, I'll go back and I'll just be so verbose and it will just be so overwrought and embarrassing. And then I'll just have a really good editor come in and be like, whoa, okay, we're going to tame this back quite a bit.
For every three sentences, we only want one.
Yeah. You know, but it can be kind of scary when you get back that first draft and it's absolutely gutted with edits and, you know, you can be quite overwhelmed and just be like, oh my God, how am I going to edit this down? But, you know, just one step at a time. And every project is so different, you know, so, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really great piece of advice and a very nice place to end this lovely conversation, though I'm enjoying it very much.
Okay.
Thank you so much for coming on, Kaylee. This has been so great. I've really enjoyed it.
Okay, thank you so much, Maisie.
Can you just tell us how we can follow your work from here on?
I'm on Instagram, I guess. I mean, like, I don't really, I just post some dumb pictures from time to time. But I mean, if you, on the palim, it's palimpsest.ca is where you can order my first book. And on my Instagram, it's just instagram.com/KayleeMichelle, which is CEILIDH. Michelle.
That's the Scottish way.
The Scottish way, yeah. And you can just, you know, or Google me or whatever. Actually, no, please don't Google me. my stuff's out there on the interweb. So, yeah.
Okay, so you're easy to find. That's all we really needed to know.
That is
but
correct.
Don't Google. Use Instagram. Great. So next up on the show, we will have the poem of the week, read by yours truly. So stay tuned for that. But in advance, let's hear Tiny Indoor Fireworks by Biffy Clyro as a celebration of the fact that tonight is Guy Fawkes Night. See you shortly.
Since I found a medicine jar, now I can ignore all my troubles. I don't think I have the heart. This weight is crippling, this weight is crippling me. It's the same old story. This weight is crippling, this weight is crippling me. I fire it up and blow it higher. I build it up and tear it down. Some of the
was Tiny Indoor Fireworks by Biffy Clyro, if you hadn't noticed that we're on a bit of a bonfire night theme here. It's now time for Poem of the Week, and you lucky things, this week I have two poems for you, both of which are related to fireworks night tonight. My non-British friends at this university are often quite of surprise that in Britain we do actually celebrate Guy Fawkes Night. So the first poem I'm going to read to you is Remember, Remember, an old folklore poem with about a million different verses that we read on Guy Fawkes Night. Remember, remember, the 5th of November, the gunpowder treason and plot. I know of no reason why the gunpowder treason should ever be forgot. Guy Fawkes and his companions did the scheme contrive to blow the king and parliament all up alive. 60 barrels laid below to prove old England's overthrow. But by God's providence him they catch, with a dark lantern lighting a match, a stick and a stake, for King James's sake. If you won't give me one, I'll take 2, the better for me and the worse for you. A rope to hang the Pope, a penneth of cheese to choke him, a pint of beer to wash it down, and a jolly good fire to burn him. Holla boys, make the bells ring. Holla boys, God save the king. Now that second verse is blimmin' horrible and offensive, but I think it's relevant to the story behind the poem. Guy Fawkes was a conspirator who, together with a group of other Roman Catholics, attempted to blow up the British Parliament in London during the gunpowder plot in 1605, and the British Parliament was then led by the Protestant King James. Ever since, we celebrate their failure to blow up Parliament with a big bonfire and we burn an effigy of Guy Fawkes. And I kind of suppose it's a bit morbid when you think about it. I certainly don't hold that kind of allegiance to my government now. These days, it's more about huddling up outside and watching fireworks, especially in Edinburgh, where you can get an amazing vantage point and watch fireworks explode all over the city. Arthur's Sea, Carlton Hill, Blackford Hill, you name it. It's one of my favourite events of the year, for that reason alone. The next poem I'm going to read you is November for Beginners by Rita Dove. I discovered this poem quite recently, when I realised that all my poetry books were filled with the work of the overwhelmingly white. Rita Dove was the second African-American to ever win the Pulitzer Prize for Poetry in 1987, and she served as the Poet Laureate for Virginia from 2004 to 2006. She is wonderfully accomplished, and this poem is a perfect entrance to this autumnal time of year. Snow would be the easy way out. That softening sky, like a sigh of relief, at finally being allowed to yield. No dice. We stack twigs for burning in glistening patches, but the rain won't give. So we wait, breeding mood, making music of decline. We sit down in the smell of the past and rise in a light that is already leaving. We ache in secret, memorising a gloomy line or two of German. When spring comes, we promise to act the fool, pour rain, sail wind, with your cargo of zithers. Doesn't that just give you, like, the most autumnal vibes? Sat inside in the warm, while the rain pours outside, that is if you're not living in halls and holding out on turning the heating on now that you know how much it costs. We've all been there. Anyway, welcome to November, folks. That is all for this week. Remember to tune in again next week at 3 p.m. for more arts-related content, and check back on Spotify for episodes that you've missed. This week, my wonderful guests were the student newspaper Culture Editors and author and creative writing student Kaylee Michelle. To hear from more fab people in the coming weeks, I ask you to follow Fresh Air Arts on Facebook, and make sure you tune in next time. Bye for now.
And shyness can stop you from doing all the things in life you'd like to. Shyness is nice, and shyness can stop you from doing all the things in life you'd like to. So if there's something you'd like to try, if there's something you'd like to try, ask me, I won't say no, how could I? Coyness is nice, and coyness can stop you from saying all the things in life you'd like to. So if there's something you'd like to try, if there's something you'd like to try, ask me, I won't say no, how could I? Spending warm summer days indoors, writing frightening Luxembourg. Ask me, ask me, ask me.
a language can't you read? Nature is a language can't you read? So ask me, ask me, ask me. Ask me, ask me, ask me. Because if it's not love, then it's the bomb, the bomb, the bomb, the bomb, the bomb, the bomb, the bomb that will bring us together. If it's not love,